Can you hear me?
Yes.
Julie. Now I'm okay, I guess. Council, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, very good. And I got a nodding from Attorney Pillard. Then we are all assembled. We are sitting six on this case rather than seven. All the justices are here by remote connection. So I will call our first case of the day. Moreshi versus Village of Williams Bay. Council, are you both prepared to proceed?
Yes, Chief Justice.
Okay, and I see we have Attorney Coletti, who is going to have 5 minutes of respondents' time. Is that correct? Can you hear me, Attorney Coletti? You got to unmute your microphone.
Yes, Madam Justice, I can hear you, and I'm prepared for my 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, super. Very good. All right. You'll have to look at our signal from our marshal. Now, you see the sign over there? It says start. And then, Marshal Johnson, if you can show them what happens next, what's the next signal you're going to give them? Okay, showing you have 5 minutes left to go. And for those of you who just have 5 minutes, that's not a very long time. So we have that for rebuttal and also for Attorney Coletti. Okay, with all of those instructions given, we will now begin. Marshall, if you can start our oral argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Charles Pollard of Claire Thompson and Pollard SC, and I represent the petitioner in this matter, Dr. Gail Moreshi. My co-counsel is unable to attend the Zoom conference due to our current circumstances, but I'm sure he's watching on the Wisconsin Eye. Today, this court is presented with the opportunity to address two issues of first impression. The first issue is whether a local board can create new minutes and a new written determination after the receipt of writ certiorari, as it's a clear violation of due process and fairness. And second, the issue is what constitutes a decision or triggering event for the 30-day deadline under Wisconsin Statute 6223 sub 7 sub E 10. And in that case, the 30-day deadline should begin upon the oral vote or the immediately filed minutes. In this case, Dr. Moreshi's due process rights were basically nullified in that she didn't have a meaningful opportunity to present her writ certiorari case. She didn't have the opportunity for a meaningful time in a meaningful manner to bring forth her writ certiorari request. She filed a complaint with a writ certiorari request, and then 50 days after filing that complaint, there was a response from the board wherein they've created new minutes and a new written determination.
It's as yes, if counsel, with respect to when she filed her action, there was nothing written filed at that time that would trigger, regardless of the event, is whether it's the minutes or the determination form, there was nothing filed at that point. So why shouldn't she have had to wait until those documents or one triggering event document was filed?
Yes, Chief Justice, Justice Dowd. And that actually brings up two different points, and it focuses on the second argument, which is the triggering events. In this case, although there was nothing written filed, and the record isn't clear, there appears to have been an original set of minutes that were filed, and those were returned.
When? The record is very unclear if those were ever filed in the office of the board and when those were filed in the office of the board. Do you know? I mean, no, you haven't shown that in the record that I'm aware, unless you can point me to somewhere.
No, Your Honor, we don't know. The only party that would know that is the board, because those are their internal records. And throughout this case, they've never indicated when those minutes were made available. Now, I think this also brings us to the statutory interpretation at issue here. What does the word filed really mean? Does filed require a written determination? There is no case law, and there's no, other than the statute here, there's nothing that requires a written determination. Now, the board has, throughout its brief, said a written determination is required under the statute. That's just not true. In fact, this court in Lamar Central Outdoor versus the Board of Zoning Appeals for the City of Milwaukee said a variance doesn't require a written determination. In that case, there was a written determination, but it didn't adequately provide the reasoning of the board. And in that case, this court went back to the oral decision, back to the transcript. And that's how it made its decision in this case. Although the other thing that we can take into account is, in this modern age, filings don't require written filings. We can file PDFs, we can file recordings, CDs, we can file video, MP4s, MP3s. All of these things are now easily filed in courts, and they're often filed in courts.
Was counsel in this case, was any oral filing done in the court?
Yes.
Your position is that the vote is the triggering event. Is that correct?
Yes, Justice.
And I am perplexed by the idea how a vote can be, an oral vote is filed. So help me with that, if you will.
Yes, the oral vote can be filed quite easily because it's recorded at the time of the hearing. So the board actually recorded its hearing. And then, assumedly, it turned it into a CD, and it handed it from whoever recorded it to the secretary, and then it became filed. Again, the record is silent as to when that occurred, because the only people that know that is the board. So it would be up to them to tell us when that was filed. The reasoning for this case is very similar to this court's reasoning in Pulera v. Town of Richmond. In that case, this court discussed section 6813 and 8215. And in that court, we had a split decision, 4-2, which was further split upon reasoning. However, in that case, two of the justices determined that an oral vote was the appropriate triggering event. And in that case, in the same as this case, one of the key factors was the quickest way to finality. And I think that's the most important reason that the oral vote or the immediately filed minutes are appropriate in this case.
But in Pulera, weren't we discussing different language in a different statute that propelled the determination that it was the vote? I mean, that was 68, as I recall, chapter 68. And this
Yes, Justice Bradley, it was two separate statutes, not the statutes that are being applied today. But the reasoning for those still holds true today. In fact, I would argue it goes even further. In that case, there was requirements for receipt, there was discussions between final determinations, and there was also a recording requirement in the highway order. So in that case, three of the justices determined that the recording was the appropriate opportunity for the deadline to run. In this case,
you're arguing there was no majority opinion in Pulera. There was a lead opinion, a concurrence, and a dissent. And so based on that fractured opinion, is that what you're resting on?
I think that's a very...
Kind of a weak foundation when there's no majority opinion.
Yes, and I think the reasoning from that case is very applicable here. It's not precedent, but the reasoning applies here. all of the parties in this case, the aggrieved party and the actual contractor and the person seeking a variance, they want to know what the decision is as quickly as possible. They want to know because they need to move forward either with the construction or they need to move forward with their appeal process. And if we use our oral vote and or the initial minutes that were filed, then we have the quickest route to finality. In this case, the board is asking us to take a ruling where we wait for a decision to occur that has to be approved at the next hearing. Now, in this case, it took 70 days from the oral decision for the board to meet again. Now, in smaller communities or in other boards, these boards only meet on an annual basis. Are we expecting then that we have to wait till the next board meeting in order to approve the minutes? In this case, 70 days the parties were supposed to wait. And unfortunately, that's just not what happens with construction. In construction, time is money. They're going to move forward right away. And that's especially shown here in this case. So I'd like to discuss what the actual decision was, setting aside for now the decision for the purposes of the deadline. But what was the actual decision? On May 23rd, 2017, there was an oral decision by the board. The very next day, construction began again on this project. It took 36 days in order to get a restraining order to stop construction. 36 days is a lot of time in construction. A building could be knocked down, foundation could be poured. In fact, on August 24th, the petitioner was required to file a contempt order and obtained a contempt order against the Edwards in this case because the construction continued after the restraining order. The board itself actually agrees that the actual decision date was on May 23rd, 2017. In the attorney's letter to the circuit court at the record at 42-2, the Zoning Board of Appeals made its decision on the date of the hearing, May 23rd, 2017. That's also
Council, I've got a question for you. In looking at the ordinance, it requires that the board find beyond a reasonable doubt, and then it has to make findings on five different factors. It then says, and so indicates in the minutes. Is it your position that the board has to, at the meeting, when it makes its decision, as it did in this case, it has to orally address each of those five factors on the record, and that it cannot then address them later in the written decision?
If the court were to adopt our understanding of the deadline, then yes, the decision needs to be made at that oral hearing. They have the opportunity to review all the information that comes in. These boards are actually fairly limited in the scope of their review. They review the same factors over and over again. So it'd be very simple for them to simply have a checklist. Every time that there's a hearing, they make the decision based on the checklist, and then it can be in the record. Additionally, if we use the immediately filed minutes, again, we have our finality as quickly as possible, but they have the opportunity to take those the reasoning that they had at the oral decision and then put it into writing. And if the word filed is our hold up here, that's the opportunity for the immediately filed minutes to be the decision.
Can you address a case that is cited in the respondent's brief? It's, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Veladzik versus Briggs and Stratton. That is cited by your opposing counsel for the proposition that a finding not explicitly made may be inferred from other properly made findings if there is evidence which would support such findings. So that's the question I have for you, because in looking at the transcript, it does appear that attorneys on both sides addressed each of the five factors. So could we infer that the board, even though it didn't expressly mention them during the hearing, that it did in fact take those five factors into account, even though it didn't mention them?
Yes, Your Honor, we could infer that. However, in Lamar Central, as we've discussed before, in that case, they actually tried to put some of the reasoning down in their written decision, and they found that it was lacking. It goes beyond simply listing the factors. So I believe that the board has an opportunity and a duty to make its own reasoning, not simply rely on what the other attorneys say. And we need to know what that reasoning is for the purposes of appeal. Your Honor, the...
I want to return to the triggering event, and we need something with certainty. So you're suggesting that the vote is the triggering event, and then, but it has to be filed with the board. So the vote has to be filed with, so it isn't just the vote, is that correct? It's the vote filed with the board. Is that your position?
Yes, Justice Bradley.
And then there's use of the term immediately, but who knows what immediately means when the vote is filed with the board. How does the board notify of this oral vote that is filed with the board? How does it notify those interested in the matter, including the people that are objecting? There's no requirement at that stage to send out anything. How is anyone to know that an oral vote has been filed with the board? Here we had a public records request, but no one is notified, I think, until they have approved minutes. Tell me what's wrong with, first of all, was anyone notified of the filing of the oral vote?
The filing, no, but they are notified, and I think this is a very important point. All the parties are notified of the meeting. There's a public notice provided, and then there's also, in the case of a variance, which is different than in the Pulera case, in the case of a variance, a certified letter goes out to all of the homeowners within 200 feet.
I'm not talking about notice and opportunity to be heard. I'm talking about triggering event, right? When does a 30-day period start running? How is, if your argument is to hold water, how are people to know when a 30-day period starts running for the filing of a writ of cert? There's no requirement to send out CDs to people. I mean, so where do you go from there? I mean, triggering has to have some definitive time. Otherwise, it's a bit meaningless.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that the oral vote plus the immediate filing requirement. I understand that immediately can be somewhat broadly skewed, but immediately certainly can't mean several weeks later. A CD should be able to be created at the time of the meeting and literally handed off at the end, or minutes could be created directly after the meeting and handed off right away. This actually brings up the biggest problem with the points of the board, wherein they are...
Counsel, before you go into the next problem, where in the briefs or the record does it show that the oral vote or written determination or minutes was actually filed in the office of the Zoning Board of Appeals?
Your Honor, the only thing I can say to that is the board are the individuals who control that. The board didn't provide that information. I will say that it's very clear based on our open records request that the CD was at some point filed and that the initial minutes were filed, but I can't tell you because I don't have the information. And that brings up another important point.
Before you get to that one, I mean, if I look at the language of the statute, it seems to indicate that you need a decision. The decision has to be filed in the office of the board, and then you've got the 30-day writ option. The decision and the filing seem to be the crux of the arguments here, but I don't really see that either party has actually argued the language of the statute in that regard, meaning where in either party's briefs does it show us that the oral vote or written determination was actually filed and when that was?
Yes, Your Honor, the briefs may not have that information because, quite frankly, I don't have that information. I don't know. Again, the board controls that information, and the board controls the timing here too. If we go under the board's definition of decision, we wait until the board meets. They have total control as to when this occurs. If they want to let this kind of go on ad infinitum, then they can. There's nothing we can do.
Council, if you look at sub H, the zoning ordinance 18.1716 sub H, that is really the only ordinance that says what needs to be stated. That is where it says that it has to be indicated in the minutes of the finding beyond a reasonable doubt of all the facts and conditions. So wouldn't that seem to indicate that that's the final decision that would need to be filed in the board? And doesn't that go along with the immediate filing requirement? And wouldn't that then be the trigger?
Yes, Your Honor, exactly. It requires those minutes to be immediately filed. Again, the board's arguing that somehow they filed immediately 70 days after the oral decision.
Hold it, counsel. Is it the vote that you're talking about is the decision or the minutes? Which one is it now?
Your Honor, either one. We will go with the vote.
I want to know which one you're advancing.
Your Honor, the...
How about all three? Then we can all go home. I mean, you know.
Yes, Your Honor. The immediately filed minutes directly after the vote.
So it isn't this oral stuff that you've been talking about that I've been scratching my head about in terms of filing a CD and how that goes out. It's the minutes you're talking about is the triggering event. Which one? You started out your oral argument with saying it was the vote. So just help me along. Which one is it?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that either would be appropriate, but within the statute, the filing of those immediate minutes most adeptly meets the statute.
So it's not the oral vote, right? Is that correct? That's not your position that you're relying on here today?
Your Honor. The statute says decision.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. It is the decision. Whether that, again, our position is that the court can take either.
Okay. How does that then, how do you sign an oral vote? That's perplexing to me also. The ordinance J, entitled decision, says that the Zoning Board of Appeals shall decide all the appeals and application within 30 days after the final hearing and shall transmit a signed copy of the board's decision. So help me on this one. How do you sign an oral vote?
Yes, Your Honor, there's several different ways. You could physically sign the CD and say, hey, I created this copy. This is the authentic copy of the decision. You could electronically sign an MP4 or an MP3. You could also, if you were concerned enough, you could have a court reporter at the actual hearing. And then they could authenticate and sign it, or the board could sign it as well. In regards to...
let me just add, so you would have us define the language of the statute by the language of the ordinance?
Your Honor, I think, again, the same reasoning as the three justices in Polaro, it best comports with all four. We've got two statutes and two ordinances that we somehow need to meld together. In our opinion, the best option to do that is the immediately filed minutes or that oral vote. And Your Honors, this is so important because if we don't have this decision, if it's not as soon as possible, it leads to these absurd results wherein the board is requesting all the parties to simply wait for them to have the opportunity to meet again and finalize the minutes. Again, practically speaking, that puts contractors in a very difficult position and aggrieved parties in a similar position.
Wouldn't they have a remedy, counsel, of a writ of mandamus to require those minutes to be filed immediately if they believe that that duty had not been comported with?
Yes, Your Honor, if the immediacy of the minutes is the determining factor for the trigger. However, the board is requesting that it be the signed written determination that's approved at the next hearing. So sure, we'd have a written mandamus, but we'd have to wait until the next board meeting, and you know, we would have to assume they'd miss it. Or if we go under the other argument of the board that they have 30 days and then we file a written mandamus, we again have the problem of extending this for what, right? And all the parties are sitting around. I file a writ of mandamus, 30, 60, 90 days, I get a decision. They then provide us with their minutes or their written determination, and then I have to file a writ certiorari on that. We're 2, 3, 4, 5 months into construction at this point. That's the problem. The building is up. The best time to have this addressed is at the time when the status quo can be maintained and there's nothing either knocked down or constructed. By the time the building is up, in this case especially, what I'm requesting and what the petitioner is requesting is for a reversal of the decision of the Zoning Board of Appeals, which ultimately is a request that the building that's already constructed be in violation of the zoning code. That's a very...
It seems that there are two written documents that have been referred to as the minutes. One that was prepared at the time of the meeting, and one that was prepared sometime later and then approved by the entire board and signed by the board. If we interpret the word minutes to be the latter document and not the former, does that affect your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. If you determine that that the rule that the board is proffering and that we have to wait for the written decision and minutes that are approved by the board, yes, that affects our argument. It's our opinion that at least the minutes, the original minutes, had no indication that they were draft minutes. We were not led to believe or told that they were draft minutes. Additionally, it's a situation where you're in trouble if you do or you're in trouble if you don't. If I don't file the writ certiorari action, the house is constructed. And in this case, if I have to wait, then it's too, either I've missed the deadline, right? If I didn't file right away, they'd say I missed the deadline. But in filing now, they're saying we filed prematurely. It puts us in a precarious position where we have no real option for appeal and no due process and fairness, which brings us to the original point. It cannot be allowed to create new minutes and a new written determination. In fact, it's also being entered into the record as an improper supplementation to the record. The writ certiorari was filed. 50 days later, we have a new written determination and decision. It was 25 days after they received a return on writ from the circuit court. And it was 15 days after the deadline on that return on writ cert. So it's both a due process violation and it's a violation of the order on writ.
Counsel, what remedy are you seeking from us?
Your Honor, we are seeking that this court reverse the decision of the Zoning Board of Appeals, and we are seeking that it finds that the decision, for purposes of the appellate period under 6223 sub 7E10, be upon the immediately filed minutes or upon the oral decision. We are also seeking that you find that the new minutes and new written determination cannot be allowed as a violation of due process. I see the amount of time. I look forward to rebuttal.
Thank you. Are you prepared to proceed, counsel?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Tom Kabush, and I represent the Village of Williams Bay and Town of Lynn Extraterritorial Zoning Board of Appeals. I just want to jump right in with the triggering event argument. I want to point out that the board never raised this issue at the circuit court. The respondents never argued that Dr. Mureshi failed to timely file her complaint, and the respondents did not move to dismiss the complaint. Dr. Mureshi received her review in the circuit court. With regard to the statutory language, section 62.23, that is the statutory section that establishes zoning boards of appeals and sets forth the procedures for zoning boards of appeal. And in particular, section 62.23, paragraph 7E10, provides that any person aggrieved by a decision of a zoning board of appeals may, within 30 days after the filing of the decision in the office of the board, commence an action. So it is.
Can you answer the question that both myself and Justice Ziegler asked a couple of times? What exactly was filed in the board? We have no idea from looking at this record if anything was filed in the Board of Appeals or when it was filed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, if we look at the return on the writ of certiorari, which is record number 43 through 48, the zoning administrator is the person who signed that return on the writ of certiorari, and he attached to that return on writ as exhibit number 2, the Zoning Board of Appeals determination form, which is dated July 31, 2017. So the zoning administrator is telling us that that is the determination form he received as required by the ordinance.
What was filed in the Board of Appeals was not the minutes as required by statute, but was the determination form, which isn't referenced at all in the statute, as far as I can tell what this form is. Is that what you're saying?
This form, Your Honor, this form is we believe, is the board's decision. This is the signed decision that was transmitted to the applicant, the zoning administrator, and the ETZ joint committee as required by the ordinance.
Okay, then what do you make of the ordinance's requirement that the actual determination beyond a reasonable doubt be in the minutes, and that all five factors be in the minutes, and that the minutes be immediately filed in the Board of Appeals?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. I will point out also in the return on writ of certiorari, the board's minutes are included as Exhibit 3, so the zoning administrator is indicating that those are the board's minutes that he received. With regard to the language of the ordinance, I think we have to look at the purpose for that language being in the ordinance. And I would argue that the purpose for the language that the minutes must reflect the criteria were satisfied be in the minutes is so that there's a public record of what reasons the board had for granting or denying a variance. That way, any member of the community can go to the office and obtain the minutes and or the written decision to see why the board granted the variance. And we have that in this case in both the board's approved minutes and in their written decision. So we have their reasoning in writing, and the public can go to the board and obtain that reasoning.
Counsel, this raises a fundamental question for me, which is, what are minutes? So I went to Black's Law Dictionary, which defines minutes as the record of the proceedings. Do you think that it comports with these statutes and ordinances to have minutes that don't reflect what was actually discussed by the board during its hearing?
Your Honor, I agree that the board did not discuss in detail each criteria at the hearing. There's no doubt about that. We have the record. However, they're telling us in their written decision and in their approved minutes that they did find those criteria satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt based upon the evidence that was presented to them at the hearing.
Well, let's set aside the written decision for a minute, though. Minutes are supposed to be a record of the proceeding. So would you agree that it's not appropriate for the minutes to contain findings that were never made by the board during the public proceeding, during the hearing?
If that's the interpretation of minutes, they did not make that finding at the public hearing. I agree with that statement. I mean, that I can't argue that statement. They did not make that finding at the public hearing.
And in fact, during the proceedings, there was a letter from, I believe, the board's attorney that indicated that the four remaining items that were not, in fact, addressed by the board at the hearing did not apply. During the hearing, the attorney withdrew that statement, but there was one board member, Mr. Choice, who said, because I don't know what the remaining four items are. So how could the board, at least this one member anyway, have possibly considered the four items in the statute if we have a board member saying, I don't even know what they are?
Your Honor, that was actually the zoning administrator who had given that opinion to the board and withdrew it, not an attorney. There was no attorney at the public hearing. But beside that, I understand your question. Board member Choice expressed some concerns. I wouldn't want to limit a board member, discourage a board member from raising concerns at a public hearing that he's thinking in his mind. Now, we know he signed the later written decision. So he apparently, after reviewing all of the evidence, came to the conclusion that the evidence supported granting the variance.
And perhaps I don't see anything in the statutes or the ordinances that says the board can't hold the hearing, hear all the evidence from both sides, and then later convene. I'm not sure if they could do so privately, but maybe they could, and then come to a decision. But that's not what happened here, right? The board made its decision orally at the hearing, but we have, shortly before that decision was being made, we have at least one board member saying, I don't know what the remaining four items are. So to me, that suggests that the board did not make findings in their minds even during that hearing, that they considered only perhaps one factor. That's what the record shows me, counsel. Could you address that, please?
Your Honor, again, I would indicate that that board member, and we're reading a transcript, I understand that, but that board member apparently satisfied himself before he voted that he was satisfied that the criteria were met. During that entire hearing, the presentation by both the petitioner's attorney and the applicant's attorney focused on the five criteria. That was their entire presentation for the length of that hearing. So it's difficult to imagine that the board members didn't know what the criteria were that they needed to apply to grant a variance. This is, of course, their ordinance that they interpret and enforce all the time. So I can't speak for board member choice. I can say that he voted in favor of granting the variance and he signed a written determination that they approved at their next meeting, indicating that he agreed with that determination. So he apparently satisfied himself after reviewing the evidence that was presented at the public hearing that the criteria were satisfied.
One more question for you, and then I'll yield my time to my colleagues for their questions. Would it be appropriate, would it be lawful for the board to make a preliminary decision and say, okay, we're granting the variance, but then later on issue a written decision or minutes that come to the contrary conclusion, a different decision altogether?
I don't think there's anything that would preclude the board from changing its decision after it took an initial vote. I don't know that there's anything that precludes them from, if they further reviewed the evidence and decided, hey, some of these criteria are not satisfied by what we heard at this public hearing, that they couldn't change their mind or their decision. Now, this board, their meetings are public. And if that happened, I suspect they would take another vote or have another motion that would be decided. That didn't happen here. At their next meeting, which was July 31, they approved their written decision and they approved their prior board meeting minutes and they conducted other business.
So according to what you're saying, someone applying for a variance who goes to what they believe is the final hearing because a vote is taken can't count on what the vote was, because later on the board could just decide that it wasn't the vote and they could do that at any time because there's nothing in the statutes about this determination form. So they could, in theory, come up with this form 60, 90, 6 months later? Is that really the result of what you're saying in terms of practical impact on individuals?
It could happen that way, Your Honor. Practically, I don't think it generally does happen that way. In this circumstance, we had some circumstances that made the next meeting come a little later than we wanted it to be, but the statute does require a filed decision to trigger a certiorari action. And the only document we have in this case that would seem to meet that definition is the board's written decision. The ordinance also requires the board to issue a signed decision that it transmits to the applicant, zoning administrator, and ETZ's joint committee. I think that's important, because it's that signed decision that the board has to transmit that triggers what happens next. That triggers the zoning administrator, if a variance is granted, issuing the zoning permit and the building permit. He can't do that till he has the board's written decision. That triggers, if the decision is to deny the variance, that triggers the applicant's opportunity to file a certiorari action challenging it. So it's really that written decision that triggers what happens next. If the board is late in issuing that written decision, there's remedies under both the statute and the ordinance. Under the statute, and it's section 62, I'll have to find it. It's in chapter 62, allows for parties to seek mandamus. It also allows for parties to seek injunction and other relief. So
I want to take you back, counsel, because you just said something interesting to me. So You're saying there is no ability to build on this variance because there's no building permit and no zoning permit until the written, that determination form has been transmitted?
Correct, Your Honor. The construction, this case was unique. Remember, this is the third time we had a variance come to us on this property from this applicant, and he had obtained a prior building permit and started building completely unrelated to this case that's before us right now.
But, so would that alleviate then the concern of opposing counsel in terms of starting building and having all the expense of starting building? You're saying in a typical situation where you're not on your third try, you can't actually build until this determination form has been transmitted because that is what triggers the zoning and the building permit.
Yes, under the ordinance, you'll see that the zoning administrator is charged with issuing zoning permits and building permits. He can't do that until the determination from the board, the written determination from the, he receives that from the board telling him that the board has granted the variance.
Is that in the statute and where is that? Or the ordinances?
The ordinance sections for the zoning administrator's duties and the zoning permits are section 18.1705, 18.1706. And then in 18.1718, there are various remedies, fees and penalties that the zoning administrator can assess if somebody prematurely begins to build. So if somebody prematurely begins to build without a permit, the zoning administrator can issue fees and penalties and can issue a cease and desist order. And if the zoning administrator doesn't do that to the satisfaction of an aggrieved party, the aggrieved party has remedies under the statute. It's 62.23 paragraph 8 that allows any neighboring property owner to institute an action for injunction, mandamus, abatement, or any other appropriate action. So there's both remedies under the ordinance that can be sought through the zoning administrator, and there's remedies under the statute that can be sought in court. So this argument that the house is going to be built if the board is late in issuing its written decision, as a practical matter, there's remedies to avoid that happening.
Counsel, you have what I would call a dissent with fervor in the Court of Appeals. And in part, the dissent says, okay, the statute shall be immediately filed. That has to mean something. So I have two questions. How do you define immediately? And the second question is, the dissent goes on to indicate that that the board's behavior fails to comport with the concept of fair process or due process and fair play, in part because it's of its creation of new minutes and a new decision, both of which misrepresent the record after Mariachi commenced this cert action. And so, you know, coming up with new evidence that's not found in the initial record is a violation, I suppose, of due process, the assertion is, and you didn't comply with the ordinance, shall be immediately filed.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to take the second part of your question first. I'm going to point out that the board did not create new minutes or new evidence. That argument has come up a few times in this case. The board never took any additional evidence after the May 23rd, 2017 hearing. That was the only public hearing and the only evidence that was presented to the board. The board issued its decision after the petitioner filed the certiorari action. But that could happen if the petitioner had filed the certiorari action the day after the hearing. The board wouldn't have issued a written decision at that point. So it can't be that the petitioner determines when the board has to issue its written decision or can preclude the board from doing its job of issuing a written decision. So I disagree with the dissenting opinion in the Court of Appeals. The board didn't create any new minutes or any new evidence. The board looked at the evidence that was presented at the public hearing and issued a written determination that indicated that it found that that evidence satisfied the criteria set forth in the ordinance for granting a variance. Okay. As to the definition of, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
As to the definition, filed 70 days after the public hearing. Is that your idea of immediate?
Your Honor, probably not in my personal definition of immediate.
What's your legal definition of immediate?
I don't have a legal definition. I'm sure there's cases out there that in other circumstances have defined immediately. I don't have an actual definition. I will state again, if the board hasn't done something it's required to do, the remedy is not reversal of the board's decision. The remedy is to seek a mandamus action in an order ordering the board to do what it's required to do. If the circumstances had been reversed and the board had denied the variance but failed to issue immediately its minutes or written decision, would the remedy be then to reverse that decision and grant the variance? No, the remedy would be to order the board to do what it's required to do. So I don't have an actual definition for immediate. I'd have to look at the case law, and maybe we did that in our briefs. I don't recall, but there were circumstances that are not set forth in the record that led to this late decision and the late meeting that occurred on July 31.
Are you asking us as a court, as a matter of law, indicating that 70 days after the hearing meets the immediacy requirement under the circumstances? Are you asking that for us to say that? Or are you asking us coming with I'm sorry, please excuse us approach?
Yeah, well, I'm coming with the more sorry and please excuse us approach, but I think it's largely irrelevant because we have their decision. We have their minutes. The board has told us what their decision is and what the reasons for their decision are in their minutes, approved minutes, and in their written decision. So we have it here. The court can conduct a meaningful review of the record. The court can conduct a meaningful certiorari review in this case and determine if the board's reasons for granting the variance satisfy the court's standard of review on certiorari actions. So we have a complete record here. If we were coming at a different point in time before the board issued the written decision and we were hearing a mandamus action, then we'd have to discuss that further, but we're not. We have these documents. We have the court's reasoning set forth, board's reasoning set forth, and this court can conduct a meaningful certiorari review of what took place in this case.
Counsel, the ordinance says that no variance shall be granted by the board unless it finds all of the following facts and conditions, and the five are set forth, and so indicates in the minutes of its proceedings. If minutes are a reflection and must be a reflection of what actually transpired during the hearing, doesn't the ordinance suggest then that those findings must be made on the record at the hearing?
Well, if I accept your argument that they must do that at the hearing, then yes, the minutes would have to reflect what took place at the hearing. And if that's the case, then again, the remedy is not reversal of the board's decision. The remedy is remand to the board so they can set forth on the record what their reasons are for granting the variance. I know that the Lamar Central Outdoor case was argued by my opposing counsel earlier. I think that is a helpful case to look at because in that case, the court did remand that case back to the board and told the board, you need to give us the reasons why this application does or does not satisfy the criteria for granting a variance. And the way I read that case is the court was indicating the court will look at both what's stated orally at the hearing and what's put in writing in a decision. In that case, it was an order that didn't set forth the reasons, and the court told the board, look, you're going to have to tell us the reasons on remand for why you're finding this application does or does not satisfy the criteria. So accepting your justice's argument, the remedy would not be reversal of the decision. And we have to look at, what if the decision had been the opposite? Are we going to grant a variance because the board failed to do something that it was required to do? Not likely. We're going to remand it back and tell the board, do what you're required to do. And if the court believes that the board was required to state its reasons on the record at a hearing, then remand it back to them so they can state their reasons on the record at a hearing. If there's no further questions, then that completes my argument.
Thank you. Attorney Coletti, I think that you can pick up here. Be sure you turn on your microphone. Right now it's off.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and also Madam Justices for this opportunity. I wanted to just address briefly the actual board's decision. I know it wasn't the subject of oral argument this morning, but it was mentioned in the briefs. So I thought I would just briefly explain how the board's decision did comport with the ordinance provisions and did meet those the standards on certiorari. To that end, the ordinance itself section is residential zoning. The purpose and intent of this particular district is to allow single family dwellings. Decision in this particular case to allow the variance is consistent with that preservation of intent. We're talking about constructing a single family dwelling on this particular lot. Petitioner argued that basically because a variance was necessary, that by definition you couldn't have met the intent of the ordinance. But it's that circular argument, really. The fact that you needed a variance doesn't in and of itself mean that you can't preserve its intention. And in here, the intention is to allow single family dwellings, which this use in particular is. The second aspect that I think bears at least a couple of a short mention is the exceptional circumstances. In the ordinance itself, the petition for review and in their petitioner's briefs, the arguments made that a lot of discussion about the fact that there were a number of different lots in this subdivision that might need relief from the setbacks. However, that doesn't mean that the ordinance itself needed to be changed or that Edwards didn't meet the criteria of this particular ordinance, because in this case, the exceptional circumstance wasn't the fact that lots of lots in the subdivision may need setback relief. The exceptional circumstance was the slope on the lot, which was 12%. And that's referenced in the board's written decision as being the basis for it. So the fact that perhaps a third of the lots in one subdivision in a whole township might need some relief from the setbacks for a variety of different reasons doesn't mean that exceptional circumstances weren't established here, and I think they were. The only other thing I would note is that while the board didn't specifically, this doesn't go, I guess, to the criteria, but while the board didn't specifically discuss all of the findings in it or all of the criteria in its decision, the Valadezic case does permit the board to make those findings by inference, even though maybe they weren't discussed. And I think that in this particular case, some of those findings are self-evident. For example, the lack of a detriment to the adjoining property owners. In this case, the board did find in its written decision, it's self-evident that the house was pushed further back from the lot line than it had been. Previously, you're just replacing one house with one that was further from the lot line. So
if you can make these findings by inference, how do we know that that is being accomplished by the right burden of proof? That is, that all of these are supposed to be, these findings are all supposed to be made beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, they were made
based on your reasoning.
Sure. Well, they were made beyond a reasonable doubt in the actual written decision, but the minutes and the transcript from the hearing itself don't specifically state that. I guess the concern was expressed that, well, yeah, they didn't discuss all of the criteria on the record, And I think the Valadezic case says that the board didn't have to discuss each and every criteria on the record, that their findings could be inferred if there was sufficient evidence. And in this case, there was evidence of each of the criteria being met, and that evidence was referenced in the written decision. It wasn't referenced in the minutes, that's true, but it was referenced in the written minutes or in the written decision. So I think that that, under the Valadezic case, I think that we complied with the provisions. So I've got to stop. I apologize. Thank you very much for your time.
Very good. Thank you. Are you prepared for rebuttal, counsel?
Yes.
Clark? Okay, please begin.
Two items on rebuttal. First, counsel for the board has stated that a permit is not issued until after the approved minutes and written determination are put into place. Based on my experience as a land use developer attorney in this area, and based on the clear record in this case, that's just not true. Construction began the very next day. There's heavy equipment on the site within 2 weeks. Again, we didn't receive our restraining order until the 28th of June, which was 36 days after the oral decision. That's a lot of construction time. In fact, the Edwards even went beyond that, and after we obtained our restraining order, he continued his construction because he knows, and developers and contractors know, they've got a much better chance in front of the courts and in front of the boards if they've got a structure up. It's much easier to argue, don't knock down my home versus, oh, I maintain the status quo. Additionally, there's an argument that mandamus or we have opportunity for a restraining order. However, if we go on the view of a decision after the written minutes and written determination are approved by the board, in this case, 70 days later, I then need to bring an action to the circuit court, and I have a fairly high burden to show that I'll have a reasonable probability of success. Now, if we go with the board's rule, I'm going to the circuit court without a decision. I don't know how it's possible for a circuit court to say I have a reasonable ability for success when I don't even have a decision to argue.
Didn't you get an injunction here?
We did, Your Honor. And interesting to note, Pulera speaks to this as well. In Pulera, the Walworth County Circuit Court determined that the oral decision was the appropriate decision. Now, ultimately, this Supreme Court decided that it was on recording in that case. But an oral decision is often used and was used prior for the other injunctive relief. So in that case, we were able to obtain the injunctive relief. But once this court decides that I have to wait, or any aggrieved party has to wait until the board gets its act together, now I've lost my ability to get injunctive relief. There was also, and that's the relief we're talking about here. Now, in Heartland Sportsman's Club v. City of Delafield, this is a 2020 Court of Appeals case. The court, under the statutes, allowed to reverse or affirm wholly, partly, or may modify the decision brought up for review. In that case, they reasoned that outright reversal is appropriate when the due process violation cannot be cured. They used the phrase, the board cannot be allowed a second kick at the cat. In this case, it's worse. It's not a second kick at the cat. It's the cat's been put in a bag and held down because I filed my writ certiorari. I've given you the answers to the test, and now you're just going to use that against me. This is why a remand won't work. Practically speaking, if we remand this case and we don't reverse, the board will simply take its written findings and determination and hand it to the circuit court. Again, we've lost our due process and fairness rights because we haven't had a meaningful opportunity to have this reviewed.
Are you asking us to deny the variance?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm asking you to reverse and deny the approved variance from the board.
But if we look at the record, arguably there is enough evidence to support granting a variance. I know that's not your position, but isn't this court to look at the evidence that was presented during the hearing, and if it supports the decision the board made, uphold it?
Yes, Your Honor. It is a high burden for us to overcome, and we understand that, and we request that the board read the findings in the way we've read it, that the findings simply do not show enough reasoning in order to uphold that Zoning Board of Appeals decision. Again, this is another example why the decision needs to be immediate or filed immediately, because the town has not only the control of when that's filed, but they also have such a high burden for the aggrieved party to meet. So the town already has all the advantages here. It's the aggrieved party and the contractors who are going to be left out in the to dry, so to speak, because they can't move forward until the town gets its act together and finally meets to approve the board, or excuse me, the minutes or the written determination. Which is, again, this is exactly why we need to have some immediacy. We need to have the immediacy of the statutes. It is a very important point here, and I believe that's why it's in the statutes.
If we were to accept your remedy and deny the variance, wouldn't that be punishing the other party for the faults of the board and not making the findings it should have made at the hearing?
No, Your Honor, and respectfully, the Edwards are fully aware of the situation. Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time and asked to finish responding to the question.
Yes.
The Edwards are fully aware of the situation. There's been three different cases involving this. In their application itself, it states there's a 30-day appeal process. So the Edwards were well aware of this. The Edwards could also come back for a variance, and we can go through this again with a new board because the boards transition over time. And we could all have a rule that we can follow because this court decides when the trigger event can occur. And we will finally be able to have a fair hearing on this. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you all three of you attorneys. You did a very good job of working through our new way of oral arguments. And I appreciate your willingness to do so and your preparedness for us today. So this concludes our argument, and we will all be leaving the waiting room until we get ready for our second argument of the day, which will start soon. Thank you all.
Thank you.